It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Borders are already overwhelmed. Just in the last 3 weeks here in the Rio Grande Valley sector, they've had more than 12,700 illegal aliens apprehended. And that's why they are worrying about that caravan getting up here and adding more to the problem. And they have here in this sector, guys, about 55 miles of a wall. And that's why Chief Padilla, Manuel Padilla, the sector chief here, says that he needs even more wall to help solve the problem. Listen.
If we had this combination of personnel, technology, infrastructure throughout my border, we would truly transform this area. It's a win-win situation for everybody. This area right here, we do not see MS-13. We do not see criminal aliens coming into this area because of the capability that we have through this combination of personnel, technology, infrastructure.
That combination is wall structure, along with the manpower of the overworked Border Patrol agents doing such a good job here, and of course the technology of cameras and infrared scopes. But here's the thing, guys. In fiscal year 2017, of all of the family units alone that were apprehended, and there were more than 49,000 in just this area alone, only 1.4% have been deported to date. So you add this 7,000 strong caravan, they get here, they claim asylum, they come across, they're going to be released because there's nowhere to put them. And that is why Chief Padilla says that if this caravan comes and is let loose in this country, more and more will continue to come. This is a serious problem.
All right. Yes, it is a serious problem. Sandy Rios with you this morning. We thought the thing was dying down. You know, the report a couple of days ago was that it was down to like 1,000. And now suddenly it swells to 7,000. Now, what's going on with that, you might ask? Well, in reading the stories about this, you can see that there's a lot of help going on. With thousands of people marching down these highways through various countries, just imagine the chaos. Imagine the kind of the amount of food. If you just think about the children of Israel wandering in the wilderness and nobody has manna, they have to feed them food. Who's feeding them? You really think that they brought enough food on their backs to feed them? They didn't. And so they're being fed. The Red Cross has sent up tents. They're being provided water. In fact, there was one observation sent to me by someone who taught in Guatemala. He was did mission work down there, and he's been watching these videos. And he said, look at their shoes. They're new and in style, and their clothes, a name brand. These are not the average poor Guatemalans that I taught. These are wearing new clothes that someone has bought them. And more importantly, look at the people. The majority are young, single men, the same type of people that were sent by thousands into Europe, young, single men. Ask yourself, who's behind this huge demographic change and why, and who's funding it? Feeding 4,000 people costs a lot. Who has planned and paid for it? And then he talks about the migrant center that they keep showing. He said there was no migrant center when he worked in Guatemala. Why are these single young men trying to overtake countries? And who is providing them with nice new name brand shoes and clothing? And of course, he went on to speculate, as many are, that many of them are gang members. I don't doubt that at all. They're demanding entry. They say no one will stop us. President Trump has to take us. Interestingly enough, the AP, and I noticed a Griff picked up on the language too, was describing this as an army migrants, an army of migrants. But they were criticized by the left, and they changed the moniker to a caravan. It's just a caravan. Now, if you look at that crossing, and if you've watched any of these visuals, you can see that it looks much more like an army. I find it interesting that Max Boot, who is a journalist on the left, well, this is his observation, and it helps you understand a little bit about how the left feels about this. It's very different than the way many of us feel about it. This is clip 5.
Is it demagoguery? How would you describe this?
It is demagoguery, Brian. It is also, I believe, racism and nativism, really pandering to the fears of Trump supporters and Fox News viewers, who tend to be older, white males, who are alarmed about this supposed invasion of dark-skinned newcomers coming to America. I mean, the threat is entirely bogus because, in fact, border crossings have declined dramatically in the last 18 years, down 80%. There is not this massive army of illegal immigrants, and these people are not even illegal immigrants. They are refugees who are seeking legal admission to the United States. But what this really underlines to me, Brian, is how the Republican Party has changed in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. This is something I write in my book, The Corrosion of Conservatism, how when I was growing up in the 1980s, the Republican Party was basically pro-immigration. It was a conservative party with a white nationalist fringe. And under the impact of Fox News and Donald Trump, it has transformed into essentially a white nationalist party with a conservative fringe. I mean, I spent decades working in the conservative media for publications like the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and guess what? They were pro-immigration. They had a very different view on all of these things than the Fox Newses and the Donald Trumps of the world, who are pushing this xenophobic agenda to mobilize their base for crass political purposes. It is tragic and it is despicable.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Max. Appreciate that. Of course, armies of young men primarily demanding that they're going to get into this country, that they must be taken, is not the same thing as compassionately allowing into this country ordered numbers of people looking for refuge. It's not the same thing. And yet he calls it racism, nativism, xenophobic. Yeah, all kinds of wonderful words they use for people who really do believe that countries should have borders and they should be protected, that we should protect our children, that we should have doors on our homes with locks, that we should have locks on our car doors, that not everyone is welcome into our personal space unless they're invited. That's kind of like a common human understanding, and that the whole world has gone mad. But I think, you know, the left is upset because they're seeing this army of invaders coming up through Guatemala, now Mexico, and it's not a good visual. And people are not crazy about seeing that. People on both sides of the aisle are not crazy about seeing that. Griff Jenkins had another part to his report where he talks about what's been happening at the border and how this is likely to play out. Let's listen to clip 9.
The officials here are having a big meeting actually today amongst themselves and trying to assess exactly what they think the organizers plan to do. Either way, Steve, when they come across, they're going to have to be processed. And if they claim asylum, they're going to be given a court date for which they probably will not show up for. And that will send a signal to more and more caravans to come. And they're really worried about how this thing's handled. When you talk to most of the migrants from Central American countries, they actually get a bus system. They take a bus from the southern Mexico border up here. They don't walk. The reason why they're walking and the reason why they're taking so long, we assume, is because they want the political attention. They want the media to cover it because they want to expose the loophole laws that we have here. You know, just a quick point here, and that is Chief Padilla and all the Border Patrol agents you talk to here say they are as much concerned about these loophole laws as they are building a wall, because at the end of the day, if there's an incentive for them to keep coming in droves, you just can't ultimately stop it all.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, what do you do if you have an invasion? And I noticed in that you couldn't see the piece that we played earlier when Griff was talking. The one sheriff that he interviewed, or Border Patrolman, border agent, he was in charge of the Border Patrol in that area. There was no wall at all, and that's a huge target of these migrants, or this marching army of migrants, because there's nothing to stop them. How are you going to stop that unless you have a phalanx of soldiers? How can you do that? I don't know what the president is going to do. I know that he's really concerned about it. He's been talking about calling in the army. It is an invasion. And so in this case, I don't think Posse Comitatus would apply. I don't know. I'm not an attorney, but it seems to me that this is an invasion and that's what the army is for. By the way, just for your information, in Western Germany, where we saw these armies of young men just charging down the highways into German cities, German towns and villages, remember those videos? It was just amazing. We saw it. You could see the aerial view of it. They were almost all Muslim young men. And now in Western Germany, 42% of children under 6 come from a migration background. 42% of children under the age of 6 in Germany are coming from a migration background. And so that's why, you know, it feels a lot more like an invasion. It is more of an invasion. It's definitely not what people who respect laws of other countries do to other countries. If you're desperate, I understand, refugee, you're fearing for your life, you might break some laws and try to get into a country, but that's not the case. I read an AP article that so many of these people, now AP didn't confess this, but I read the text, are coming because they want, one of them is just, one woman had just graduated from some university. She has some sort of training. She said, I'm coming. I want a better job. I want a job. And so this is kind of the way it goes. Workers needing, wanting work, and then others having other things in mind. So who's pushing this? Well, many people think George Soros is, and I probably would be one of those. We'll be coming back to that discussion. You know we will. But I want to stop for a second because last night there was a debate between Ron DeSantis, who is the candidate for governor in Florida, against his opponent, Andrew Gillum, who is the socialist leftist mayor of Tallahassee. And they had quite an exchange on this. I want you to hear part of it. It's clip six.
I mean, I'm concerned about Mayor Gillum's platform about abolishing immigration and customs enforcement and having an open border and having a sanctuary cities and a sanctuary state. The fact is, that's a wet kiss to the drug cartels. We got a major opioid epidemic. Most of that is now being fueled not by prescription medications, but by fentanyl being sent in from China to Central America and brought across the border. He says he won't cooperate with the Trump administration with respect to illegal immigration. But if someone's here illegally and they're committing a criminal offense, you've got to honor the detainer request. I will, as governor, and I'll make sure those individuals are given to the Trump administration so they can be repatriated to their home country. The safety of our communities comes first.
Mayor Gillum?
Yeah, well, the congressman made my case as to why this administration is on the wrong path in the way that it deals with immigration and border control. Instead of tracking these containers of fentanyl that are coming in from Asia, instead of dealing with drug traffickers, with sex traffickers, they've turned their attention to babies, caging them, and ripping kids away from their mothers. I believe in a border. I believe that we have borders. I believe in the laws that exist in this state as they exist around immigration reform and obviously keeping our community safe, which is why I preside over a city that is experiencing a low in the crime rate.
Yeah, he just doesn't want to enforce any laws. He says he believes in laws, but he says he wants sanctuary cities.
Congressman DeSantis, would you request that the federal government, if you were governor, deport all 850,000 undocumented immigrants in Florida?
Florida, we are not in the immigration business. I mean, we have our communities. But if somebody comes in contact and they're here illegally, then that's when I think you work with the federal government. But we've got to do run-of-the-mill crime. Our sheriffs, I've been endorsed by over 50 sheriffs, which I'm very proud of. Police Benevolent Associations endorsed me, state troopers. We have huge support of law enforcement. So they've got to keep their eye on the ball. But anyone who's here illegally, I mean, if you do something, like you molest a child and you get convicted here, you're here illegally, you need to immediately, upon finishing sentence, be given to ICE and you need to be sent back to your home country. Now,
all right, that's the first part of that debate. But he goes on because DeSantis, of course, it was part of the Freedom Caucus. He stepped aside from his House seat to run for governor. And the race is surprisingly close. Andrew Gillum is at 47%. Republican Ron DeSantis at 46%. Let me let you hear the last part of this debate. Let's listen.
Andrew, during the primary, said he wanted to abolish ICE, said he would not cooperate with the Trump administration vis-a-vis illegal immigration. That means you're going to have more crime in Florida. And this is a mayor who presides over one of the most crime-ridden cities in our state. They had the record number of murders last year in Tallahassee. In fact, they had to send in the Florida Highway Patrol recently for an operation called All In because crime is so out of control, they needed to help stop the bleeding.
Thank you, Mr.
Well, the congressman went to far too many good schools to not get it. In my city, what we have said is, one, to replace ICE and put it inside the Department of Justice, an organization that it would at least have fidelity to the law. Second, what we've said is if you commit a crime in our community, you will be arrested and you will be dealt with and prosecuted under the letter and to the fullest extent of the law.
Will you cooperate
that does
with
not
Trump's ICE?
That does not in any way gel with what the congressman just said, but it is clear that he has no relationship with the truth.
Well, will you honor a request from Donald Trump's ICE agency? If they provide a detainer request, will you honor it as governor? Will you work with Donald Trump? Yes or no?
You can proceed with your time.
He won't answer the Jake. That's important because that's what happens when somebody's
Jake,
a criminal. I've been a prosecutor.
Okay, so that's the way it went last night. Ron DeSantis debating with Andrew Gillum. We'll come back to that race at a different date, but don't stay tuned because we're going to talk about elections today. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor. True story. He goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
New Bern is a wonderful small town. We were one of many communities that was devastated, seriously injured by Hurricane Florence.
I had 5.5 feet of water in my house. It's been really sad.
8 Days of Hope needs volunteers in New Bern, North Carolina.
I mean, I had no hope 3 days ago. I walked around in circles and I didn't know what to do and where to go. And then these volunteers came.
Come be the hands and feet of Jesus with 8 Days of Hope. Visit 8daysofhope.com.
With 8 Days of Hope coming in, it gives those families hope where mom and dad can get back to work and the kids can get back to school. And that's all we have right now is hope.
I've seen a lot of people posting things on Facebook saying, I wish I could do something. Call 8 Days of Hope and give people hope just the way they're giving us hope.
8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Coe, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A state can really drum up vacationers with a clever marketing slogan. Remember I Heart New York? Or what about Virginia is for lovers? So when the Nebraska Tourism Commission decided to come up with a new slogan, they knew they were facing a giant obstacle. Truth be told, the Cornhusker State is not exactly a vacation destination. Dead last, according to nationwide polls. John Ricks is the executive director of the Nebraska Tourism Commission. He says they're dealing with brand apathy. I mean, let's be honest, it's hard to compete with Dollywood and the sandy white beaches of the Gulf Coast. So the Tourism Commission set about to changing their state's negative perception. And that brings me to their brand spanking new slogan. Drum roll, Nebraska. Honestly, it's not for everyone. Huh. Hmm. Well, good luck with that. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The Democrat Party has become an angry, ruthless, unhinged mob determined to get power by any means necessary. Your vote in this election will decide which party controls Congress. The choice for every American could not be more clear. And by the way, I have to thank Dean Heller for helping us with Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh. Dean Heller was there. Dean Heller was there right from the beginning. So Democrats produce mobs. Republicans produce jobs. That's become hashtag. That's called hashtag. That's a new hashtag. That's a hot one. This November, vote for jobs, not mobs. If Nancy Pelosi, crying Chuck Schumer, and the radical Democrats take over Congress, which would be a shame, they will try to plunge our country into a nightmare of gridlock, poverty, and chaos.
All right, that was the president in Nevada. President Trump, of course, helping us to express this in probably the clearest way possible. Jobs, not mobs. And I think that's, you know, it's catchy, but it's really true. Unfortunately, I don't know if you saw over the weekend that Senator McConnell and his wife were accosted in a restaurant in Kentucky, screaming. They took their doggy bag and threw it out the window, standing over their table, screaming, tormenting them. And, of course, the patrons in the restaurant, interestingly enough, let's just say they spoke up vocally. That's the first time I've seen that happening, saying, you know, stop it, get out of here. That's enough, or whatever they said. But people weren't having it. So that at least is a change. I think people are getting sick of this, but it's not over. And you may have seen also the gentleman that was stealing Ted Cruz signs. He's caught on video. The guy that's putting the signs down is videotaping him. But the strange thing about it is he rushes the guy that's taping him, who owns the signs, who was just placing them on his own property, the guy that's being taped is being filmed. He turns around and rushes at this guy and gets about 2 feet or less away from the camera and just, I can't think of what the term would be called. Let's just say, sounds like a voice from The Exorcist. I hate Ted Cruz, with this horrible face. It's just amazing. I mean, something is abuzz here that I think even people who generally don't think in spiritual terms are recognizing as just evil. Really evil. In fact, one more thing, a Brooklyn U.S. Attorney's Office has charged a New York man with threatening to murder and assault 2 U.S. senators in retaliation for their support of the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. The senators haven't been named, but that's where we are, folks. And so it really, truly is jobs, not mobs. Well, we've spoken about a lot of states. We talked to Dave Bratt last week about the 7th District of Virginia. And I told you that in 3 different races around the country, former CIA operatives, females, who served under John Brennan, which from my mind is not it's not anything to put on your resume to be proud of, they are now challenging conservative Republicans. And one of them, Abigail Spanberger, is challenging Congressman Dave Brad. Abigail's being funded by Act Blue, as are the others. And that money comes, for the most part, from George Soros. But lots of other things are happening in Virginia, and I wanted to bring them to your attention. Kaya Scheidler is the director of the Counter-Islamic Grid. It's CIG. It follows domestic Islamist groups. And he's joined us this morning to tell us about another statewide race in Virginia. It's a District 33. Good morning, Kyle. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy. Thank you for having me on.
All right, so you've spotted this race, and Northern Virginia, Kyle, as you know better than I, has long been struggling with the infiltration of Muslim Brotherhood and Islamist operatives really into mainstream politics. And they've been embraced by the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. They just have. That's all I can say. Not necessarily widely. I think strong conservatives in the Republican Party have been resistant, but then there's the other kind, and they haven't been so much. But this is a Democratic seat in District 33. So tell us about this candidate and what you know about him.
So this is an interesting story. What we're talking about is the Democratic candidate for Virginia State Senate District number 33. Now, this is interesting because that district is already filled. It's kind of filled by Jennifer Wexton, who's running against Barbara Comstock for Congress. So this individual, his name is Sharafat Hussein, is preparing to run to replace Wexton if she were to defeat Comstock, essentially. So he's out in front of the actual election cycle, but he's getting ready to fill this spot.
Okay.
He's an interesting guy. He's sort of an established presence in his county politics. He's fundraising chairman for the Loudoun County Democratic Committee. He's a member of its executive council. He's also vice chair for the Lee District Democrats. But when he's not doing sort of local Democratic politics, he's, interestingly enough, the U.S. president for the Bangladeshi National Party. Now, the Bangladeshi National Party is a sort of Islamic nationalist party in Bangladesh that has a violent reputation. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has in the past attempted to deport individuals who had affiliations with BNP because they described it as a tier 3 terrorist support organization. And the Canadian authorities have made similar accusations against BNP members, saying that the Bangladeshi party engages in elements of political violence and has alliances with Islamist groups, including Jamaat al-Islami. So this individual who has this role as the BNP president for the U.S. is running for a local Democratic seat. And we thought it was interesting, so we wanted to bring it to people's attention.
Yeah, it's interesting. This kind of follows a pattern that I've seen, Kyle. Now, I'm more familiar with it with people affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood. And we need to explain for a second that there are many different manifestations of Islamic Sharia law and people that adhere to it. And from many different geographical areas, we happen to be more familiar with Muslim Brotherhood. And I think they have the strongest hold on that front in the United States than these other groups. But these other groups may have different names, come from different nationalities, but the ideology is the same. Fair to say, Kyle?
Yes, that's true. When I refer to Jamaat al-Islami, Jamaat al-Islami is a Islamist party founded in Pakistan and very influential in the subcontinent. So they're they are essentially, you could say, the Muslim Brotherhood for India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and areas around there. So they're very similar ideologically to the Muslim Brotherhood, but they have sort of a different background. Now, the BNP has a political alliance with Jamaat al-Islami. BNP was the party that enabled Jamaat al-Islami to participate in politics in Bangladesh, and both BNP members and Jamaat members have been tried and convicted in Bangladesh's ongoing war crimes tribunal. They have, over the past several years, been engaged in a war crimes tribunal where they have been trying Islamists and other individuals who fought for the side of Pakistan in the Bangladesh War of Independence and attempted to prevent Bangladesh from becoming independent and engaged in a number of ethnic cleansing and other violent attacks, and Jamaat al-Islami and members of the BNP participated in that. So that is sort of the background for these guys. So it's interesting to have this case where you have an individual associated with this foreign political party. It's a foreign political party.
So he's a full-fledged Democratic operative. He's got all of these monikers. He's the Loudoun County Democratic Committee. It's chairman of the Loudoun County. Loudoun County is a big county, by the way, a very prosperous county in Northern Virginia. He is the chairman of the Loudoun County Democratic Committee, a member of its executive council.
Fundraising chairman, yeah.
Okay, and vice chair for the Leesburg District Democrat. So those are big monikers in local politics. At the same time, as you're saying, he is a leader in this terrorist-affiliated organization, the BNP.
Yeah, I mean that's how DHS described them. He's also according to the Bangladeshi press, his brother-in-law Tariq Rahman, who's a BNP leader by the Bangladeshi government in connection to a grenade attack that killed 20 people. That was in 2004, and Rahman now lives in the UK, and the Bangladeshi government continues to agitate to have him extradited back to them so that they can try him. But this is, you know, sort of an example, and you were talking about earlier in your lead-in about sort of the violence that can appear in politics. This is the way politics is done in a lot of countries. It's very violent, and that's not the kind of thing we want here in the United States. And I think it would behoove us to ask an individual who is running for a local office if they have these kinds of affiliations. How do you stand on these things? I mean, it's worth asking. I don't think we should assume necessarily what his assumptions are or what his views are on any of these things, but a curious political press would ask, right?
Yeah.
Ordinarily, one would expect them to ask, and I'm hoping to see that. I'm not optimistic that we will.
Yeah, Kyle, you know, we've been following this, you and others of us who watch these things, and I've been trying to report on them for a number of years. I haven't talked really about the Islamist influence in a long time because other things have taken the headlines. But I'd be really curious to know what your evaluation is. You know, I think especially, well, we have Keith Ellison, who has some really suspicious ties with various organizations on the left and in terms of Muslim Brotherhood connections, Andre Carson as well. And then there was at the a few years ago a Virginia delegate who was elected, who also had a very mysterious, like almost non-existent biography. Like part of his biography just dropped out, and I think he actually, I'm not sure if he won or not, and I can't remember his name in this moment, Kyle. But my question to you is: do you see other areas of influence in Northern Virginia there where you are?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Northern Virginia, I think, is a unique area for this kind of issue because of its proximity to the capital, because of the long foothold that certain Islamist groups have had in the Muslim community in the Northern Virginia area. I mean, it's worth stressing that not all American Muslims feel this way, but Islamist groups typically represent themselves as the leaders of the Muslim community. And it's so easy for U.S. politicians to say, you know, I want to reach out to someone who will represent this community, and they could be a community leader, and that way I can go out to that community, I can get votes. And so they oftentimes they view these Islamist leaders as the individuals who will deliver Muslim American votes. And that's the extent of sort of their understanding of these guys, that they're just another type of community leader. And they're not, right? They're,
no,
not,
they're not
engaged. Islamists are not engaged in U.S. politics the way we think of U.S. politics. They're engaged in a process that is essentially, you know, on behalf of an ideology that is anti-constitutional at heart. And so we need our politicians to be a little bit smarter. We need them to understand that not everybody who claims to represent a community truly represents that community, and not all of them have agendas that should be embraced.
You know, we just have a few minutes left here, Kyle, but it makes me remember that Abigail Spanberger, who is challenging Dave Brat in District 7 in Virginia, Andrew McCarthy wrote a lengthy article last week about how Abigail was pushing and helping the blind sheikh, his attorney, as I recall. She was all about helping him get speaking engagements, and she, of course, was with the CIA. I think she is fluent. I think she's a fluent Arab speaker, not that that's condemning, but she has kind of an affinity for that. So there are other forms that this takes. The axis, as some would say, between the left and the Islamic radical, like the Islamic Muslim Brotherhood, whatever community you want to call it, is a strong link, is it not?
Yes, increasingly we've seen strong links between Islamist groups like the Muslim Brotherhood supported individuals and groups, and especially like the hard left. And we've seen a rise in the hard left, sort of the democratic socialist types, in this recent election cycle. You know, they're making a strong push, and they've done that in large part in alliance with these Islamist groups. We saw that, for example, in Michigan, with both the attempted run for governor by Abdul El-Sayed, as well as by the successful Democratic primary win of Rashida Tlaib. Rashida Tlaib has been an individual who's associated quite a bit with these sort of Islamist groups, and they were heavily, heavily backed by sort of Democratic Socialist Party operatives. Alexandria Ocasio in New York go out there and support these candidates in Michigan. So we have seen that alliance with the left, with the yeah, extreme left, and the Islamists. And I think the Democratic Party really needs to readjust and say, is this really something that we want our party to be about?
Yeah, I guess so. You're a much kinder way of saying it than I would. I think it's a real threat. I've had it. I Abigail Spanberger, by the way, taught in the Saudi Academy, which was called Terrorist High, by I believe it was Chuck Schumer, like many years ago, when right after 9/11. So this is what we're dealing with, and we have to be very smart. And that's why we're bringing this to your attention. Kyle, thank you. This is Sheriff Fahd Hussein, Democratic candidate for Virginia State Senate District 33. Just be aware. And Kyle's article about that we'll put on our Facebook page so that you can read it. Kyle Scheidler, director of the Counter-Islamic Grid. Thank you, Kyle.
Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In the burning bush encounter, Scripture records that it began as Moses kept Jethro's flock. When the Lord saw that Moses turned aside to see, he called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses," and he said, "Here I am." Notice God didn't speak to Moses until he gave full attention to what God was trying to show him. Diligent attention to daily duty is necessary. We must be careful, however, not to allow duty to become an idol. Are our hearts still sensitive to God? Can God still get our attention?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. In a major win for the sanctity of life, the Alabama Supreme Court last Friday upheld the death penalty for a man who killed both his wife and his unborn child. He was found guilty of two murders, not just one. Justice Tom Parker, in a concurring opinion, made it clear that Alabama law regards an infant in the womb as a person, regardless of its stage of development. Parker points out that even the Roe decision explicitly declares that if the fetus is a person, then its right to life would be guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. The court only produced Roe by denying the humanity of the unborn child. It is Parker's hope and mine that the Supreme Court will overturn the constitutional aberration of Roe and return to the states the right to protect the most vulnerable among us.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing, he had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump intends to withdraw the U.S. from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, and the Russians are pitching a fit. Vladimir Putin insists we remain bound by an accord that even the Obama administration said the Kremlin had been violating for years, threatening our allies and forces in Europe and Asia with new nuclear weapons for which we have no in-kind deterrent. The INF Treaty also imposes no restriction on similar threats increasingly posed by the Communist Chinese to America's personnel, bases, and friends in the Western Pacific. 3 decades ago, I helped President Reagan try to negotiate the Zero Option, a deal that would permanently eliminate all intermediate-range missiles, but had to warn the Senate that the INF Treaty wouldn't do that. Mr. Trump is right to stop practicing unilateral disarmament and to restore the INF deterrence we need in Europe and Asia. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. First of all, could I just thank you again for your generosity last week and share-a-thon? You know, we ended up 11,882 of you called in pledges, and we were able to raise $2.1 million, which is that's going to be so helpful. You know, for the radio, you can imagine the costs of having something like 180 stations around the country, and of course, all the personnel and all the equipment. And so, thank you, thank you, thank you for your generosity. I want to mention that tonight, President Trump is going to be in Texas doing a tailgating party in Houston for Senator Cruz, who's running against Beto O'Rourke. They've got something like 100,000 RSVPs. And so it's so large that they are setting out these huge screens and a tailgating party outside because not everybody can get in. There's some interesting articles going back tracing the contentious relationship between Ted Cruz and President Trump, and it certainly was contentious toward the end. It wasn't always, though. I remember very specifically when Senator Cruz, when they were candidates, invited President Trump to come to Washington to do a rally against the Iranian deal. It was really Ted Cruz who pulled him in on that, and they were actually great allies for most of that campaign. And Senator Cruz really, I think, brought President Trump along on several issues, including the Iran deal. So they had a terrible spat. It's really ugly to revisit it, and unfortunate. But I did not realize that when after President Trump won the White House, he invited Ted Cruz and his wife to dinner. And at the time, I think Ted was still very resistant, but now he says, I could have chosen to make it about myself, to be selfish and say, you know what, my feelings are hurt, so I'm going to take my marbles and go home. But I think that would have not been doing the job I was elected to do. And so now they've sort of reconciled. And so here it is. The president will be in Houston tonight, and there are going to be huge crowds. And my understanding is that the left is also planning a big rally. So this should be interesting. And this will really be interesting because we get the Beto O'Rourke supporters and, of course, Act Blue, which has been trying to turn Texas blue for a long time now. So we'll have dueling rallies, and we'll see how that goes down. Phil Haney is my guest now. Phil is a patriot beyond, honestly, par excellence. He was one of the early founders and directors of Homeland Security. He is the author of See Something, Say Nothing in his role at Homeland Security. You may remember that Phil was a real patriot, and it got him nothing but trouble and ended up with him losing his job. You've seen him on television telling his story, but since that time, Phil has been going to various states around the country. He was in Michigan for a number of weeks. Now he's been in Minnesota tracking various campaigns and candidates. And he's most recently, again, been in Minnesota. And I wanted us to talk to him this morning to find out what's happening there. Phil, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy. It's glad to be here.
Well, of course, we have to talk about the biggest race there, at least in terms of notoriety, is the Keith Ellison race for Attorney General against Doug Wardlow. Now, most people haven't heard of Doug Wardlow, but you've gotten to know him a little bit, haven't you?
Yes, we've met each other at different events probably four or five times now since when I first went up about 6 weeks ago. And he's a constitutionalist, and Keith Ellison is just the opposite. He violates constitutional principles in several areas, open borders, sanctuary cities, things in that area. And him being top cop is not, I don't have to imagine what it would be like, because I worked under people just like him when I was still active duty with DHS.
Hey, Phil, before you join me, I was talking to Kyle Scheidler about what's still going on in Northern Virginia with some of the Islamic influence. And, of course, this is something that you know all about. You're an expert at this. And Keith Ellison, describe in kind of clear details to listeners what his connection with Muslim Brotherhood operatives like that is. What do we know for sure?
I'm sure glad you asked, because that's a very good specific question, and there's a good specific answer for it. Let's start with CAIR, Council on American Islamic Relations, a front group for the Muslim Brotherhood, proven 10 years ago now in November of 2008, be directly related to Hamas. Keith Ellison has been speaking as a keynote speaker at Hamas or at CAIR events for at least 10 years, including this year. In February 2018, he was a keynote speaker at the New York CAIR annual banquet. And he's also received financial contributions from them. And now let's shift to another group. This is another front group from Muslim Brotherhood, and that's Muslim American Society. It's very active in Michigan, and he has been supported, again, for at least 10 years from the leader of the Muslim American Society. His name is Asad Zaman. I actually went to a rally they had about 10 days ago in Minneapolis and listened to Asad Zaman and the other candidates in Minnesota that are Muslim background, and listening to them promote their policies. But Keith Ellison, because he's afraid of publicity, because of his background not only in the Muslim Brotherhood but in possible domestic abuse allegations, didn't show up. So it looks to be like they're even realizing he's a liability because of his background. But nonetheless, Muslim American society is a front group for the Muslim Brotherhood. So is CARE. Ellison has been deeply involved with those two organizations for at least 10 years. Why that's important? Because the Holy Land Foundation trial in Dallas, Texas, back in November of 2008, proved irrefutably that these groups are tied to financial support of Hamas. So nobody in a public office who is standing up for the Constitution and national security should be anywhere near those organizations, period.
You know, there's an interesting, I'm sure you've seen this. There's a woman named Marnie Hockenberg. I think she may be affiliated with Pam Geller, but I'm not sure. She says she's Jewish. She was in Minnesota, and she tried to attend an event that was called Islam, the Guiding Light. As-Salama Alaikum. It's the sign. It says, welcome to the Mass Minnesota Convention. She said she tried to get in, but she was kicked out. She said the organizer said she's on a list, and she had to leave. And she says, how can Keith Ellison, if he's AG, protect our rights? She said he won't. He'll squash them. She talked about her concerns about there being a list. What kind of a list? Will Keith Ellison keep this list when he becomes attorney general? Did you think this is an overstatement, overreaction on her part, if she was indeed asked to leave because she was on a list?
They told her so. I was there.
All right, so you heard that. You're witness to this. All right, so the implications of that to you are what?
Well, Keith Ellison, starting with the executive order from President Trump, on what the Muslim community calls the travel ban, which is simply an effort to increase our national security and vetting process, always complains about Muslims being on lists. And then, lo and behold, we find out that the Muslim American Society out in Minnesota has a list of people that they don't want attending their meetings. They're doing it in order to protect Ellison from the spotlight. So they have a list. It doesn't seem to bother them at all. And that's the point. Yes, as an AG, is he really going to protect the rights of all citizens to express themselves freely? The Muslim community, groups like CARE, are very, very vocal in their opposition to any of the policies of law enforcement and national security, even more so now during the Trump administration. And yet they don't have second thoughts about barring people from open public events. So there's a huge disconnect right there.
Of course, there's another issue in that campaign that people are more familiar with, Phil, right now. Because I don't think anybody's talked about Keith Ellison's. He was the first Muslim congressman. He swore in on a Quran. It was the first time anyone had been sworn in on the Quran in the United States Senate. That was famously known but kind of forgotten. But the other thing that's made the news, of course, are these allegations in the wake of the Me Too movement and, of course, what happened with Brett Kavanaugh, that Keith Ellison has been abusive to girlfriends and wives. He responded recently in an interview about this allegation from Karen Monahan, who's accused him of abuse and says she has proof. Let's just listen to what he says, and then I'd like your comments about what impact that's having. This is clip two.
So this is not multiple cases. We were in a long-term relationship. It ended 2 years ago, 2 days before the primary. She made these allegations. They're not true. There is an ongoing investigation, which we hope will conclude.
Will that be done before the election?
I don't know.
Okay, so that was quick. But Phil, how's that playing in Minnesota?
It's gaining traction right now. If you can rely on polls, which, you know, are infamously unreliable, but nonetheless, the polls basically place him in a dead heat right now. And considering his reputation in Minnesota, he's quite well known. That's quite an accomplishment for Doug Wardlow to be even with him at this point. The debate goes on about the domestic abuse allegations. We still have just over 2 weeks before the election. So I think it'll be on the front burner as far as a subject. And we'll see what happens in the next 2 weeks, is whether Karen Monahan, for example, actually comes and lays the proof on the table, which I hope she does. But the hypocrisy of the Me Too movement is really quite stunning. When you saw our senators in states of hysteria over Kavanaugh's alleged activities 36 years ago, and yet they can't even seem to come to terms with allegations that are fresh that just recently happened with people that live in their own state there. So there's another thing to consider, too, Sandy, and that is that Keith Ellison's co-chair of the Democratic National Committee. And they're running on a platform of shutting down immigration, period, flat out. No more immigration enforcement, open borders, sanctuary cities. That's the platform of the DNC, and he's co-chairman. So do we really expect him to uphold the law when, if he were to become AG of Minnesota? No.
Well, that's the scary thing about it. He would be the chief law enforcement agent, the attorney general, and that is frightening. We talked a little bit before you joined us, Phil, about jobs, not mobs. That's kind of a slogan that the president has been using. I think it's a good one, jobs, not mobs. And last week, there were reports out of Minnesota that at least two, I think they were state candidates, Sarah Anderson was attacked by a man when she was out. She's campaigning for, I don't know what she's running for, but it's some statewide office. And she was hit by a man when she got in her car. She confronted him because I think he tried to take her sign. And then another candidate was cold-cocked, sitting in a stool in a bar talking with constituents, and a guy hit him and he has a concussion. Do you sense that there, this may sound like a silly question, but are you feeling the tension in Minnesota? Is it palpable? Are you seeing a lot of campaign signs? You're seeing arguments, tension? What are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing it coming from the top down, and it expresses itself at various levels in the states. But the DNC itself, Eric Holder just said, when they go low, we kick them. Hillary Clinton says, we'll have civility restored when we take power. And, we have statements like this that keep coming out from the top down. So everything in politics, as you know, works from the top down and from the bottom up simultaneously. So it's starting to express itself right in Minnesota and other states as well. So it's never good when the top leadership of a political party starts advocating violence. Something inevitably is going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And this would be no exception, would it?
No, because it's got all of its divisions. Minnesota's like so many states, it seems to me. It has this these salt-of-the-earth citizens paired with people who are, on the left of the left. And then you enter the Muslim sort of infiltration into the political scene and also into Minnesota life. And so you've got a real split situation. It's a time of confusion. There's no question about it. Phil, are you going to stay there until after the election?
Yeah, I'm going to be here right through till the election time. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, and you say that you've heard Doug Wardlaw speak. He's the opponent to Keith Ellison in the attorney general's race, right? And you think he's?
Yeah.
What do you think you can say
he's
more?
He's real good, solid. He's solid. Yeah, he's real good.
All right. Well, very interesting. That's the sort of the lay of the land up in the Land of Lakes, Minnesota. And I hope this helps this morning, Phil. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for all your hard work to try to make things right wherever you are. And so I appreciate that and appreciate your friendship. Thanks, Phil.
You're welcome, dear. Thank you so much.
All right, talk to you soon. All right, well, there you go. That's we're 2 weeks from the election, 2 weeks from tomorrow, and each day. By the way, Ken Cuccinelli will join me tomorrow morning. We're going to talk about the Senate races around the country, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.